Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, welcome to Blacktaculate, a podcast series featuring UK young black professionals, where we find out how they do what they do, so you can too. Or not. After all, it is your life.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Blacktaculate, a podcast series that features UK young black professionals, where we try to find out how they do what it is they do, so you can too. We are basically asking them to send that lift back down so we can rise. Now, today's episode, we have Michelle Owusu, who has many, many hats, but on this occasion, we are speaking to her specifically about being a marketing manager for Channel 4. Yes, guys, Channel 4. She's been in Channel 4 for the last 5 years, working on documentaries. She's worked on Made in Chelsea, Empire, etc., etc. More to the point is she does give us best pieces of advice on how to get into the industry, specifically what marketing actually is, because marketing can be quite an ambiguous term, but she specifies what that means within Channel 4. And the resources she uses, the news outlets and like media consumptions to keep herself up to date with her industry. She gives us that. And yeah, she's just phenomenal. Really and truly, she just is. She gives us her details. So I do highly recommend getting in touch with her if you can. Now, before we go, any feedback about this episode or Blacktaculate generally would be invaluable. So do hit us up on our social media handles, Blacktaculate across all major platforms, or via email, which is contact@blacktaculate.com. Now, let's get back to this episode. It's a great episode, especially if you want to know what marketing is, if you want to know how to get yourself into a big news institution like Channel 4. I can't imagine anyone better than Michelle, who's been doing it for the last 5 years, to help us along the way. So without further ado, I bring to you Michelle Owusu. Bye.
All right, I think we're pretty good.
And I can separate that from
that. Yeah, exactly. So the voice you're hearing is Michelle. Is it Owusu?
Owusu.
Am I
well
saying
done.
That right?
Well
hey, I should do. We're neighbours. Ghanaian versus a Nigerian jollof.
He's going there.
This is going to be a great conversation. So yes, like I mentioned earlier, and the voice you are listening to is Michelle Owusu. So say hi.
Hi, everyone.
Hey.
As you said, Michelle Owusu here. Some people call me Michelle Shanti. That's just a nickname.
Hey.
But we're all friends and family here, right? So yeah, you can call me Michelle Shanti if you want.
How comes? Why did I call you that?
It's a really long story and not a funny one.
Okay.
So I'll let that slide by. But no, it was just a nickname that I got in uni. My friends started calling me Shanti for some sort of reason, and then it just stuck.
Black friends.
And then it stuck, and then I embraced it. So
I
sometimes you just embrace
it. Is that all on your Twitter handle?
It is.
Is it?
Yes, at Michelle Shanti on Twitter.
Boom.
There you go, got the plug in already.
Already, and I was going to do that at the end, but you know
I'm working marketing, like seriously.
There you go. So look at that segue.
Nice.
So yes, the reason why we've actually got you here is because you do work in marketing.
Yes.
And for a specific company, which I'm sure we all will know, you know what? Let me not do you the service. Tell us what it is you do and we'll chop it up.
Cool, we'll go from there. So I work in marketing. I work at Channel 4 in the marketing team, and I have been here about 5 years now. So,
damn,
yeah.
You said those rungs.
Yeah. Got those handcuffs on. So, yeah, riding deep. So, yeah, I've been at Channel 4 for about 5 years, working in the marketing team, and it's across various departments that I've sort of developed my experience. So I used to work across documentaries and news and current affairs. Then I used to work on E4 for a bit. So working with like Made in Chelsea and helping launch Empire when it came
she
to the UK.
She winked at me when she said Made in Chelsea, by the way.
I know it's a guilty pleasure. Like, you look like a Made in Chelsea guy. You will love it. So yeah, worked on the campaign that launched Empire in the UK as well. And then now I work across drama. So the likes of Humans, National Treasures, really high profile dramas with high profile talent. So that's the department I'm in at the moment. So that's the day job.
You've got many hats, aren't you?
Yeah.
I love it. You said that's the day
job. That's the day job.
All right, let's, we've got that, guys. So cool. Let's actually hear the other hats as well.
Yeah,
and we'll get
hats.
Back to the day job, the money maker.
Yeah. So I've always loved television, hence why I'm working at Channel 4. It's always been a channel that I've always wanted to work at. Mm. But at the same time, I've got a real passion for diversity and the inclusion of diverse voices and stories in TV and film in particular. I guess it's just stemmed from growing up and not really having that many UK references. It's always been Sister Sister, Moesha, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air that I always used to watch. And there was very few UK bits and pieces around. Yeah. So that I think that always stuck with me.
Okay.
And then obviously trying to get into the industry and finding it a bit difficult because I didn't really know how. I just thought, well, this is my passion. I love television. Let me just start a little side blog about it.
Ah.
So that's how
so
that
you were
sort of
blogging.
Started. So yes, I was blogging.
Around what age is this, do you want me asking?
Oh my gosh. Well, that's probably... Well, I had
we
a first
blog. It kind of
matter
what age you are, anyway, with a sister-sister reference.
Gosh, I've revealed myself. But I had... My first time I started blogging, I probably was in university. And that was more a social commentary blog. So it wasn't anything TV related. I think blogging was coming up and it was... What was the site? Was it blog sites?
Blogspot?
Blogspot. That's what I was using. And it's just social commentary, but again, still around the idea of diversity and how brands all presented it. And then, obviously, trying to get to TV, trying to figure out how. Then I stopped using the social commentary blog, it all moved into television.
Yeah.
So I started doing that probably about 5 years ago.
Amazing. There's a lot to be said about that, you know, where you were just doing it, self-started, you didn't need permission, you're blogging while still had your eye on the prize of trying to get on TV.
Exactly, and I found that sort of helped as well, getting through to Channel 4, because in the interview, yes, I could say I've done all my degrees, or not all my degrees, I've got one degree, but done my degree, did my master's, but they were really fascinated with the things I had done outside of academic stuff.
Right.
So it talks a lot about the blog that I have, and it's SceneTV. SceneTV.co.uk is the website.
Oh, does it still exist?
Yeah, it exists. Okay. So, yes. Yeah, so this is the blog that I'm currently running now, but it's turned into almost like a platform for news and opportunities for people to get into the industry.
Amazing.
And features on up-and-coming creatives. And
Scene, S-E-E-N?
S-C-E-N-E.
Scene.
Scene, like N Scene.
Yes.
So,
Scene TV.
Yeah, so what started as just an outlet for my passion about diversity has now turned into a platform that actually really helps other people.
Amazing.
So over the last 5 years, I've just sort of seen it grow and the audience numbers grow as well. And the opportunities that have come with it have been amazing. I get to go to a lot of screenings. For example, last month, I think Spike Lee was in the country.
Yes, he was.
Yes. So he did like an intimate Q&A.
At the BFI, right?
Yes. So I was able to go down to that. It was hosted by an experiential events company called We Are Parable. Got to report on that event. And last year, we were officially accredited to be a media sort of outlet for the London Film Festival, again, hosted by the BFI.
Amazing.
So got to go to press junkets and screenings sort of things like.
And this is everything outside of the Channel 4.
Exactly. Jeez. So I almost say, yes, Channel 4 is like the day job and I love it to bits, but I would always emphasise engaging with your passion projects because, one, that's what helped me get into Channel 4 as well because, like I said, they were so fascinated with, oh my gosh, you've gone out of your way, use your own initiative to develop your passions outside.
Yeah.
And it just shows creative thinking, shows initiative, and those are all the things we would like in someone working here.
How is that not your 9 to 5 then? It sounds like it's
it feels like a 9 to 5. And it's only recently in the last year, 6 months maybe, that I've brought people in to now help, because obviously rising the ranks at Channel 4 means even more work and responsibility, which I do love, but then it also limits the time that you have outside of work to try and dedicate to your passion. So I'm trying to keep them at an even keel in terms of the effort I give, but obviously most of my hours are spent at work. So I do have a few interns that sort of report on events, and it gives
you
them...
You send them out and then basically build up their experience.
Exactly, and I think that's a useful way to sort of give back as well. So people 100%. Who are trying to be like journalists and they're fresh out of uni and they just want to be in and amongst the industry, because I meet a lot of people just by going to events people in a similar field. So it's so valuable to do that. So to be able to give other people who want to be in that area that exposure and that access.
And a Sing TV is an angle specifically, because I know you say you're all about diversity and inclusivity. So is it just spotlighting and showcasing people of colour?
So I would say the majority of it would be through a black sort of lens.
Okay. Because you're black.
I know, of course. And because it started with, as a passion project, and it's come from a real place, and that I did not see myself reflected. So in some ways it is skewed that way, I would say. But then we do look at other cultures. For example, we just reported on an Indian season that the BFI are hosting about Indian filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Disability is another angle that we go in. And also just class as well, because that's the big issue. Like, it's not only race. And I think a lot of these things can, you know, are intersectional. So class is a big issue as well. So making sure, you know, there are enough people from working class environments.
I did not know
female directors is a big, big issue in the industry as well.
Yeah.
So yeah, it covers all angles. But I will say, yes, if you go onto the website, you might see that there is a black skew. But I'm not
I mean, you're on Black Ticulate here, so...
There you go. So I'm speaking to the right kind of people. No one's going to throw stones. It's fine.
It's okay. We spoke to our white friend and they said it was okay.
Thank you. Yes, our white friend to say.
It's funny because I never knew this. I actually brought you on here because of marketing for Channel 4.
I know.
Is it a money issue? Is that why you haven't done fully fledged into Sing TV?
Yeah, I think it's probably like all online platforms that have started up. You try and find your way and find a way that you can monetize what you're doing so it can turn into a full-time job. So that one, but I would say the largest thing, I do love what I do at Channel 4. Like, I've always wanted to work at Channel 4. Studied marketing, did an international marketing master's. So it's always been a dream for me to be here. So at the same time, it's because I like doing both.
Okay, well, you touched upon that. Can we get into the professional context?
Yeah, cool.
A little bit? You love doing what you do at Channel 4. What do you do at Channel 4?
Yeah, so what do I do? I'm going to try and be succinct as possible. Okay. So marketing's role is all about making sure people know a program is on and to want to watch it. So you're dealing with a lot of analysis and research into how the human mind sort of works and what will convince someone to watch a program. And also just behaviours. You know, where do people go? Where do people want to watch television, especially now where there's so many different platforms you can watch TV on? So it's a lot of it's founded in research and behaviours. But that's basically what marketing's role is. It's making sure people come and watch a TV programme. For example, Made in Chelsea. So if Made in Chelsea is coming back for a new series, they're like, oh my gosh, it's coming back. You need to let people know. Not in that voice, but yeah, something along those lines. So what we would do is sit down and we'd say, okay, what's going to be our marketing strategy and campaign? So usually it consists of on-air trailers. That's our biggest sort of asset, running trailers on Channel 4 and Channel 4's other networks, because we have E4, More4, Film4, 4/7.
Right.
So there's quite a few. And
dare I say, is it free to do so, since it's your own asset?
I mean, yeah, if it's a program for Channel 4, yes, you definitely run that in your own airtime. We own the airtime, so you just pick where you want to run that. No one holler at me for any free advertising because I cannot help you. But but yeah, so we have an internal agency called 4 Creative, and they have producers and directors. So you'll sit down with them and say, okay, Made in Chelsea is coming back. We've got to make an exciting new trailer to get people excited about it. These are the storylines. Put this in it, put that in it. So
it's not real? The story?
Ooh, did I spoil something? No, I can go into that a little bit later, but it isn't real. The situations may be manufactured slightly.
Yes.
But real people, real stories. But yeah, this is what so-and-so is going through this month, and this is what we should include. So once you've got all that down, they'll cut a trailer, a really nice trailer, and you'll sort of feedback with it. You'll speak to the legal teams as well to make sure that there's nothing in it that's offensive. You get it signed off by the commissioner, who's the person who sort of brought the program into the channel in the first place.
Right.
So that's one area, trailers. Then with some big campaigns, we do a marketing off, we call it off air, so it's not on Channel 4. So that could be posters, radio ads, newspaper adverts, yeah, digital, Facebook, social, Twitter, Instagram ads.
And that all feeds into you.
So as a marketing manager, you've got to manage, oversee that whole strategy and sort of pick, okay, these are the media that we're going to go down to. And usually based on research, as I said. So you'd be like, okay, well, Made in Chelsea, it's typically women of a certain age. We need to hit them here, here, here.
Yeah.
And then, so as a marketing manager, you've got to oversee all those different elements and make sure the campaign's delivered on time, make sure that it's effective, make sure that your budget, you're using that effectively as well, and making sure people come in and watch. So,
what are you measured on?
So largely, there are quite a few sort of metrics, I would say. The main one is viewing figures, because I guess that's the job. You have to make sure people come and watch, but there are always factors that can run against you. And marketing don't work in a silo. Yes. You also have the press team. You might say press is a dying industry, some people might argue, but it definitely isn't. When you look at the research and the people that found out about a program, they're looking in a magazine or in the listings, it is probably higher than you think it would be.
No, 100%. They said if you have the last pound to spend it on PR.
There you go. Exactly. Nice stat. I love it.
Thank you. I'm not a marketer myself.
All right. No.
Oh, I am.
I'm with my people.
So you work on a large budget and then you obviously have to ensure that the people watch it.
And then also it's about brand as well. So some of the research we do after a campaign is how has this campaign had an impact on how people see Channel 4? Because it is Channel 4's something that relies on the brand. Like when you say Channel 4, it makes you think of so many different things, like innovative, diverse, you know, great, fun, risky programs. So it's how does your campaign positively impact that? So, it's not always about the ratings. And a lot of times it's about reputations. For example, some of our news and current affairs programs, they're not going to be as big as EastEnders in terms of numbers, but they're going to win awards and they're going to get, you know, BAFTA nods, Golden Globe nods, Emmy nods, and they have done in the past. So it's about the reputation as well. So you've always got to keep that in mind.
Do your parents know what you do?
This is something I've been trying to tell them for so long. Like, oh, is
it? Yeah, although she works Channel 4 now.
They'll go to the church and announce it. Yes, my daughter is now working for Channel 4. And everyone's like, oh, Channel 4.
Yeah.
But then ask them what I do and see what they come out with. I don't think they know. I think they think I make programs.
Interesting. Because I'm wondering what that conversation is, because you're working in a media industry. Yeah. What was that conversation like? Did they ever like try and push you into a certain...
When I hear other people's stories and talk about, their dad wants them to be a doctor or an engineer or a lawyer, I'm so thankful. Like, I didn't really get pushed into those areas, and none of my siblings really did. Got a sister who works in healthcare, another brother who works in digital marketing. He's an analyst, and then another one who is just finished uni, but he's trying to pursue like a business accounting sort of route. But we've never been sort of dictated to by our parents. All they say is you need to get your profession, something that you studied, something that you can get a job with at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So I do remember when I was picking my A-levels and I said I wanted to do dance. Yeah, you can imagine how well that went down. So I think that's the only time I've been like, can you leave?
Get out
of this room. I think that's the only time I've been like dance. Told off by my parents, because I loved dance as a child and my parents really invested in it. I went to gymnastics. My dad paid for like gymnastics classes. I went to dance all through my childhood, so I thought, these parents are backing me. I'm living, gonna be dancing for Beyonce. Get my Zonta ready, get my Zonta down. Came, I was like, yeah, cool, so I'm gonna do business, English, media, and dance. My dad was like, here, pardon me.
So what did you do instead?
So A-levels, I did business studies, English, just because I really love English, media studies, and I did psychology for an AS level.
And then moving from that, you went into higher education.
Yeah, so I went to university. I went to Aston University in Birmingham.
Okay, wow.
Yeah,
I'm
going to leave, you know. These shots are just so uncalled for.
That seems like a good
Where did you go?
I went back to LCC.
Cool.
London. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool,
so,
cool.
It's all good.
Yeah, I think uni was a fun time. Yeah. So I did marketing, so very straightforward.
Did you know you needed to do that in order to do what it is you do now?
I feel like I did it because I liked it. And I think that's something I've always done throughout my life. I do things because I like it. Okay. Not necessarily, I don't necessarily have my parents in my head saying you need to do this because you're going to get a job at the end of the day. Right. I tend to do things because I liked it. I really liked marketing because it was a mix of being creative and being strategic. And yeah. I think that just worked with the things I was interested in and my personality as well. So I'm creative, but very logical. And I like to look at research before I make a decision. It's that sort of merge of the two.
Molds quite nicely.
Yeah. So you don't need to do marketing to, like, when you speak to the people in my team, I think I'm the only one who has studied marketing.
Like through and through marketing.
Through and through marketing. Okay. You've got people who've done English, philosophy, sociology, okay. like even maths.
What?
So you don't necessarily need it. And I think it's something I learned about the industry quite late. So that's when I said, oh, I was struggling to find out how I could join the industry. Because I thought you need to have all of this media experience. I didn't have any strict media qualifications. I didn't know production very much. But I loved television. So having that passion for television is what shone.
Right.
So, yeah, it doesn't... yes, I think going to university shows a certain skill set and a certain, I put quote-unquote, intelligence, because I think people assume, okay, you've been to university, you've passed with a certain grade, then there's a certain sort of common sense that you might have or intelligence about you.
Or the ability and attitude to learn for a certain duration of time.
It's the time, exactly. And I always say, people are like, oh, you did this, you went to university, you did your master's, you're so smart. I was like, no, I just know how to pass. I know how to study,
yeah.
And I like to study, and I know how to play the game to pass an exam.
Right.
Like, if someone asks me a question, you could say, and that's why I have a niggling thing about exams and written exams, because I always feel like you can have the most amazing response to a question that is asked that no one's ever thought of before, and it shows such a level of intelligence. But if in the marking book you haven't asked, you haven't mentioned
said
the
those
points,
words, those keywords,
you'll get a zero. Yeah. Yeah. So I have a big issue with the whole exam system, but I can't take that one on. I've got diversity to deal with, so yeah, I've got to pick my battles. But yeah, so that's what I mean. There's an assumption of going to university that, yeah, you have a certain set of skills.
So basically, there's no typical route in.
I wouldn't say there was. But
you just need to be passionate about...
I think passionate and show that. So anything you could do outside of work.
So... insofar as your role specifically with Channel 4,
yeah.
like environment,
yes,
you've been there for 5 years.
Yes.
So you've hit the rungs that can be hit. I'm sure there's still more.
Yeah, there are still more.
are you able to, for those who are listening, especially those who are aspiring to become marketers
yeah.
for such a company as Channel 4, what are the rungs?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do you always start?
Yeah, and it'll differ for each one. And it probably has changed now since I've started, because now we've got an apprentice in our team.
Okay.
And that wasn't around 5 years ago. So it's probably changed a little bit, but how I started
off. Still trying to make more rungs. Than
I know, more rungs.
You've got to dance for your dinner.
I know, exactly. So I started off as a marketing exec, but there was like a marketing assistant role.
Right.
Underneath. So technically you'll start off as marketing assistant, marketing exec, maybe go to senior marketing exec, if that's where I went to afterwards. Right. Then marketing manager. The marketing manager is where I am at now.
Right.
And after the marketing manager, you've got group marketing manager, and then you've got, you might have like a deputy head of marketing or just the head of marketing.
Right. And that's a top rung. So you take
head of after head of marketing, hold up, there's directions. A chief marketing officer. So and he oversees a lot.
Now
of
you become
stuff.
That C
suite. I know. Yeah, exactly. That's when you get your own office.
When you get a couple more zeros at the end of that bank balance. Get me. Okay.
But I think it's nice the way we work, because we work in an open plan office. So I sit, my like deputy head of marketing is right behind me, and then again behind her is the head of marketing. So we're all quite close, and you get to sort of have those open conversations. Yeah. In the morning, be like, oh, who's seen Game of Thrones? Or you share news about the latest sort of marketing strategy that you've heard about. So it's a really nice sort of environment.
So do you execute and implement, or are you just looking at things strategically and you have all, I guess, your soldiers executing and implementing for you?
I would say I'm still part of the implementation.
Okay. What does that look like?
Yeah, and it can get down as granular as deciding what copy goes on a social media post.
Oh, wow.
But it can get the other end of the spectrum where you're saying, okay, which audience should we go for? Where does our strategy start? So that's the strategy starting point.
Right.
And then what? How do we position it? What's the one sort of phrase? What's the proposition that we think we're going to hang this whole campaign on? So that's the beginning phase. And as marketing manager, you have a lot of responsibility to set that. I think it took me a while to get to that level where I can set the strategy because you have to do lots of research, speak to different departments in the building. So it's really about relationships as well and knowing who to talk to. So not just research, speak to media planning, you might speak to an external media agency to get all the insights you can to develop that strategy. And that sort of filters down and you're sort of managing that filtering process all the way down to, okay, the copy's going live tomorrow. This is what we need to say on this social media post to sort of say, so like, oh, do we say this? Do we say start tonight? Do we say start tomorrow? Like, what's more impactful? Like, it gets so granular to that point. But we do have social media teams that we work with. So along that spectrum and along that line, there are different teams that you work with at different stages. So, but the marketing person is the thread that goes through all of it because that person at the end with the social media, they may not have been across this initial strategy at the beginning. So that marketing person is the conduit, yes, it's the person who's going to carry it all the way through to
love
the
that
end.
Word, conduit.
Oh, I love that. That's my word for the day.
So, I can tell you love what you do.
Oh, you can tell.
Yeah,
okay, that's good.
Time. Honestly, like,
that's good.
I mean, I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs and stuff, and I really get the opportunity to speak to people who are in traditional corporate environments.
Right, yeah.
So, guys, if you are listening to me and you feel you can teach how you do what it is you do, holla.
You
already know how to. But can we always talk about the pros and cons of the role? Because let's not build such a fantasy.
Of course.
Are there certain types of characteristics, say, for instance, that might not do well in the profession?
I think if you like working by yourself, this is probably not the role for you.
Oh, really?
Because, as I said, you're the conduit throughout the whole strategy and whole campaign, and you've got to speak to so many different people.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And if you just feel like you're not really a good communicator or you just don't really like dealing with other people, that's why a lot of people become entrepreneurs. So I've heard from my entrepreneur friends because they either don't like working too much with other people, and it's people from different walks of life.
Yeah.
Like, but I would never, not in a rude way, but the people I work with are not always the people that I'm going to get engaged with outside. So you've got to know.
And having drinks with them or whatnot. Yes.
Exactly. So it is really a people industry. I think anyone will sort of tell you that about media, that is a people industry. It's about the relationships that you create, it's about the people that you do know. So I think anyone who's just a bit like, I don't want to deal with people every single day, that's my day, dealing with other people every single day. From the moment I get in, it's picking up the phone, speaking to the agency downstairs, making sure they're all fine, speaking to our media agency, speaking to this person, speaking to that person. Yeah. I talk all day. So when by the time I get home, I'm just like,
bless you.
Shattered. No talking for the rest of the evening.
Right, gotcha.
So that's why people don't call me in the evening, or they just WhatsApp me. I prefer if you just WhatsApp me because I'm done with talking.
Noted.
I really don't like phone calls in the evening.
Well, I'm grateful for your time.
Yeah, you're getting the blessing right now. So I'm going to crash in about 5 seconds.
Is it? Oh, no,
I'm joking.
Don't. Please don't.
Okay. So yeah, I think that's if you don't, one note. If you don't.
If you don't enjoy working with people,
other people. Yeah, such. I think you're going to struggle in a job like this.
Any others?
This industry thrives on ideas. And you don't have to necessarily be from the creative team to come up with an idea. Ideas can come from anywhere, and that's really encouraged in the industry. A lawyer can come up with an idea and you'd be like, oh, I didn't think of it like that.
Right.
And you sort of embrace it and try to take it on. So again, if you're a person who does like coming up with ideas, it's great for you. If you're a person who, I don't know, maybe likes to stick to the rules a bit, then maybe not.
Are there any work techniques?
Well, I mean, as with any job, I guess long hours, but I think especially working in media because, you know, you tend to be reactive and sometimes you have to be on your phone.
A tweet might have gone awry.
Yeah, exactly. You've got to keep your eye on social media. Even like real world events, for example, I also work across Film 4. We have lots of big blockbuster Film 4 trailers that might have explosions or people jumping off buildings or people in buildings. So it's just like if something happens in the real world, obviously you don't want to be insensitive and put out a trailer that's, you know, that looks similar to a real world incident that has just happened. Yeah. So I think it's quite reactive. So it means that your normal hours, what might be for some people, a 9 to 5, it's not necessarily like that in the media industry. And just with television's always on, so it's not something that stops at 6 o'clock and you pick it up, you know, 9 o'clock in the morning and getting it. You've still got a few hours during the evening where television's still happening. So you've almost got to keep that in your head. So I try to switch off.
The hours, yeah.
Yeah, time. And I guess because you're so busy and we are quite a small team here that there is a lot to do. But I think it's sort of expected, but I think it's a self-care thing that you need to manage within yourself. So I tend to switch off weekends, especially. I think there are enough people on an email chain if something happens. Or I would hear that something happens and then maybe I'd check that, you know, it doesn't impact any of the work that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like most of the time I try to have that self-care and say, okay, I'm done with Channel 4. Now I'm in CTV mode and just try and switch. But it's not always as easy to do that.
I don't know how to fit this in our conversation, so I might just be really abrupt. But guys, you know often, although it might not seem like it, I definitely do try and prep a little with our conversations. And so I always ask my guests or I send them some questions.
Yes, they were fun questions.
And I just like want a single sentence or a single word, right? But no, not Michelle. But do you remember the first time you felt black?
Yeah, I can't remember what I wrote now. Right. But I think growing up, first gen, I think most people who are first gen will say, okay, I knew I was black quite early on because your culture is such a big part of your identity. Yeah. And even people here, they're like, oh, no, Michelle's Ghanaian. Or, you know, they know that a lot of the time I say I'm Ghanaian first, even though I consider myself British Ghanaian, Ghanaian British, but being Ghanaian is such a huge part of who I am. And so I think maybe when I started school, is probably when I first realised, like, oh, okay, these worlds are very different. Hearing the experiences of my friends and versus the experiences that I have at home and the food that you eat. 100%. I think,
the food is such
a big thing. It's like, oh, yeah, did you have fufu yesterday? No, nah, sausage and beans. I'm like, oh, okay. Do you ever have fufu? So I think it's just like, that's probably like starting school was when you realise, okay, people are different.
Yeah.
But I think pre then, I had an older sister, I had lots of cousins. And where I lived in the area, there were so many, you know, black people around that I felt like, you know, okay, this is my world, this is my bubble.
You mentioned something which, if you don't mind us talking about it, regarding a red car.
Yes, yes. It's so weird. When you asked me that question, I think, obviously it's not something I talk about all the time, but it's a memory that I have. And it's like, I can still see the person's face. So I said in the sort of responses that there used to be a guy that used to drive around in a red car around my area, Southeast London, and used to shout racial things, I think, at kids. I do sort of remember his face. It's probably melded into another person, but I have an image of him in my mind. And used to just drive around. I think all the sort of parents knew, because every time you see the red car, you'd be like, get away from the red car, like, get back inside, oh, that red car's there again, sort of thing. It wasn't often, and I think it probably lasted a matter of months before, and then we never ever saw it again. And I think I said in the response, I don't know if it was a paedophile, racist, or just a racist, but I felt like you're only approaching children. There must be some paedophile thing about you, but really, really odd. So I think, again, and I think by that time I started school, so I knew that the world was different. So I think that was the first time I experienced any kind of racism, I would say, but at the time I was just like, what's this strange man doing? I don't really have it. I didn't really have any context for racism. And the school that I went to, even though, yes, it was very mixed, it still had a large Black community. So I never felt alone. I think other people's experiences might have been different. I've got friends who grew up in Coventry or grew up in like more, you know, sort of rural areas, and their school experience is totally different to mine.
Yeah.
So I think I almost grew up around my people, I would say, quote unquote. And then when I went to secondary school, I went to, okay, St. Saviour's in Olavs, which is in Elephant Castle, and Black girls were the majority in my class. Like, okay. We ran that school, basically. So again, I didn't feel out of place going up to university. Going up to college, I went to a Bates one.
Okay.
And it's SFX, which was in Clapham.
Wow, she named and shamed that college, you know.
Because I do like SFX. Yeah. I know everyone has their things about college, and it was a great college, blah, blah, blah. But I enjoyed my time at SFX. I picked up a couple of great friends. So that's, I see it as a blessing that I went there. I guess going back to secondary school, I did work experience for 2 weeks and did it at a bank, Watch Charles Bank. And again, that's the first time I felt a professional setting, like, so this is what I'm working towards.
Right.
Just knowing that, okay, I'm not going to be the majority here. Like, I'm probably going to be the one.
Right.
The one. Yeah. In any sort of professional environment. So I think that prepared me. And then obviously leaving university, and I worked in various places. I worked at a PR company, Weber Shanwick. And then I worked in public sector a little bit for a charity. So again, I think going into those professional settings and going through to them quite early, because I also made sure that I did work experience during university.
That's like phenomenal advice, really, that people need to understand.
I say it to my little brother all the time. Like, I know it's easy to say summer holidays, oh yeah, school's out, let me chill. I cannot say how valuable that experience was. Just like every summer, trying to find some kind of, even if it's 2 weeks, even if it's a couple of days, like, just to say, can I shadow you? And I'm really, like, bold and bullshit. Like, I'll find someone's email address and be like, hey, what's up?
Nice.
I got a proposition for you. How about? And someone's, I remember I was watching, I can't remember what video I was watching. It's probably a Gary Vee sort of inspirational video. Yeah, exactly. So always saying, think about what you can offer someone. There's a lot of people who go out saying, oh, you know, I really want this job, or I really want this, blah, 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 blah. But what are you actually offering to this person that you're asking something for? A lot of people will give you an opportunity if they feel like they're going to get something off the back of it. That's human nature.
Right.
They're quite selfish. So it's like, what value can you give to someone? So I think always in my approach, I've always thought about that. Like, why would you bring me in? Like, what can I do for you? And it pays back tenfold. So a lot of the jobs I had coming out of uni.
That's phenomenal advice. What's the worst advice you've been given?
Worst advice I'd be given.
And sorry, I interjected there. I felt like you wanted to say something off the back end of uni. Remember. Sorry, Michelle.
No, it's all right. I talk so much.
No, it's all good.
I was going to say, so off the back of uni, a lot of the jobs I got in that small period after finishing uni were recommendations.
Amazing.
And that's because of years built up doing work experience on the side and, you know, I cannot say how valuable that sort of is, especially when you come out of uni, then you're just looking like, oh my gosh, what do I do with my life? Like, doing that background work.
Yeah, a lot of people, I mean, this is what I tell those who are coming up. University is going to spit you out regardless.
Exactly.
Like, whether or not you pass or you don't, it's going to spit you out regardless. So are you prepped for the real world?
There you go.
So when you have an opportunity to actually gain as much experience, it's invaluable, because you're not only gaining experience from the actual discipline that you're looking to go into, but actually gaining experience from those professionals who are doing what it is you potentially want to do when you leave.
Yeah. So like I said, at Channel 4, they don't necessarily look for a degree. They're looking, can you communicate? Can you work with other people? Have you got good organisational skills? So if you can build all of that before you even get into, you finish uni or you're ready to take on like a professional environment, then you put yourself ahead of a lot of people who came out with maybe first but don't have any work experience.
100%.
So
well, amazing. Is there anything, just to put a nail on the professional context before we go into the light fire questions, is there anything that you think I've overlooked in just a conversation that we're having regarding how to do what it is you do? Because are there any specific tools, any trade, like magazines, press, anything to be reading, to be just
So I've always been a reader as well. I just love reading books, and a lot of my reading material, when people say, oh, what are you reading? I'm like, a campaign magazine. Yes. So it's not like a big literary sort of novel that I'm sort of got my head buried in. It is trade and a lot of it, newspapers.
So like, you mentioned campaign magazine.
Campaign magazine, Marketing Mag, Marketing Week.
Marketing Week, yeah.
And also Broadcast.
Okay, is it called Broadcast?
Yes.
Okay.
Better be called that because I get it every day as an email alert, but it just sounds like that's just so
literal. So it's like newsletters as opposed to actual physical
copies.
So
you can sign up for a newsletter, but you can also get, but that subscription, you can pay for the actual sort of copy. And
there's
then
PR Week as well.
PR Week. And also things like Guardian. Like before I could even, I knew what those trade bits were. Media Guardian, I was on that every single day because that just gives you a lowdown of the industry and it's for free. People complain that God is so left, but you know, I am. So I think it fits my school of thought. So Media Guardian is a great, great resource. And I would say always be on the lookout for opportunities that are probably not, you know, shouted about the most, because the way I got into television or even knew that I could get into it is because I jumped on a scheme by the Edinburgh Television Festival. Okay. They do it every year, it's called The Network. So they take about 200 young people up to Edinburgh during the Edinburgh International Television Festival every summer. And they just put you in like workshops, masterclasses, just learning about script writing, program development, marketing, and things like that. Just learning about the industry in general. And they don't ask that you have any experience whatsoever. The application form just says, tell me about a program that you like. I had a few other questions like what you're doing, like CV-based questions about what you're currently doing, blah, blah, blah. But at the time I was working PR and I was like, oh, I really want to try this, get into the TV sort of world. And it came up as an ad because I was reading The Guardian. Wow. So I saw an ad on there, thought, off a whim, let me just apply for it. Talked about a program, I cannot remember what program I talked about. Might have been like a reality show, like Made in Chelsea or something like that at the time. I don't know, I can't remember. Or The Hills. I used to love The Hills.
Yeah.
On TV. Ah, so many
guilty pleasures.
I know. So did that. And I was so surprised that I got through. But I ended up getting through. There are two other black girls in my class or in that scheme. I think now they've probably reached out more and it's probably well known. Because at the time, I'd never heard of it in my whole entire life. Right. But having that experience, I think, changed my career. Not to sort of embellish it and make it sound like, but it was a moment when I thought, this is accessible. And I think it's more of a mindset thing because you sort of built, especially 5 years ago or longer than that, you just built that, okay, this world is maybe not for me because you don't see yourself.
As a representation, right?
Exactly. So even getting into that network was a boost, and then being in close contact with people who are head of development at BBC or head of news. And they were so receptive. They would give you their email addresses. And so off the back of that, I had a few email addresses. I reached out and they were just so like, okay, cool, come in.
Amazing.
Here's a week. So I spent like 2 weeks at MTV News. Off the back of that, I met a lady there called Susan Eunice, and she was like an MTV producer. She's now working in South Africa. But she had an entertainment website called Punch Bowl Blog, very old school. So I started doing work with them. So you see how it's all links. And I worked with them for about 2 years and going to like more music and entertainment events. So again, it built up my experience and my knowledge in that area. So see how it all sort of links together. And I think it was just like, it opened a world for me that I never knew I could get into initially.
So
try and find schemes, maybe in the most remote place. It's not going to come to you, is what I would say. And I know that's annoying because it's like, why should I have to put so much extra effort into finding it? You know, but if you really want it hard enough, you'll go out and look for it. So find those schemes or any sort of initiatives or networking or panels and talks like the BFI, BAFTA Guru, they always do talks. Latimer Talks, like not too long ago, I had a talk with Reggie Yates, and it's like, it's free. You just go down and you just meet so many people who are in the media industry that way and you just make connects. So find talks, read those industry mags if you're looking for marketing specifically or PR specifically, read those trade magazines and just like articles and also any sort of books on people that you are inspired by that have written, like biogs or I won't call them self-help books, but you know.
Oh, like those lifestyle gurus, so like Gary Vee and
Someone's got his book list.
Listen, we're cut from the same cloth.
Yeah,
because even I think you got an Ian, but
The same kente cloth. Because I think maybe you might think they're over the top, but they offer good life skills, I feel.
Yeah.
So in terms of like believing in yourself and going out and getting it, I think they can offer some good skills in that area.
They're amazing. So are you ready for some quick round fire questions?
Gosh, let's
the
see.
Answers don't have to necessarily be quick. Ideally, let's make it quick.
Okay, let's make it quick. I can't do quick. You know already. He asked me to write down one sentence and I wrote a paragraph for each response.
If I was to mention the word success,
yes.
He springs to mind and why?
One person.
Yeah. Well, okay, give me people.
Okay, I'm going to say one person. Ava DuVernay,
ooh,
the director. Yeah. And there's a reason why, because she was very passionate about directing, but she didn't really get her break until her 30s. And there were some people who feel like, oh, if I don't get it now, I'm going to give up. It's done. It's too late. I'm too old and whatnot. And I guess you always hear about those overnight successes or child prodigy. The world is obsessed with youth and feeling you have to have made it by your 20s or what are you doing with your whole entire life? Someone like her, someone like Viola Davis, who, again, didn't really get her shine until later on in life. Those are the people I look up to and sort of say, wow, well done you for continuing with your passion. And I think Ava talked about it. Ava, first name basis, my best friend. She talks about it, I think not too long ago, in an article just saying, do it for the love of it rather than for the fame. And I guess, you know, there are some people who are in it to get a sort of success. But she said she was just as happy as showing her documentary to 30 people in a community hall and seeing their reaction versus screening it at, you know, with Netflix and, you know, getting a reaction from the whole entire media. Like, she just loves creating content that creates a reaction in people or changes their thoughts in some way. That's what she set out to do. So to her, that is success, whether she's showing it to, you know, a film festival versus a community hall. So I look up to her and sort of say, okay, you're successful because you're living out your life, doing something that you love and that you've chosen to do. And I know that not everyone has that opportunity.
I thought this was going to be brief.
I know, I told you. I said, is this a quickfire question?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I thought this was just an extra bonus question.
A quickfire question, my girl went.
Listen, I don't do quickfire. I don't do quick. I am my mother's child. I don't do quick. I will sit you down. And take you quickfire. Let's
Quickfire. No, I do understand that. Okay,
yes.
So
okay. Now it's quickfire, seriously.
Yeah, it was as well before. Okay, again.
Let's ignore that one. That was a shout out to Abraham.
What would you spend your last £5 on?
Plantain. Sorry, now I'm being restricted.
Yeah, you went so in like that. Her hands on the table, guys. You can't see her, but she's really restricting herself. And the way she fired it, like it was a rush. Plantain.
Become a mastermind.
Wow,
like,
plantain. I like plantain. That. No one's ever said that.
Should I?
Yeah, please, explain? Of course, why not?
Plantain is a gift from God.
I like that.
We should respect it. Like, if I'm going to go out and this is my last £5, my last £5 are about, you can buy like what? 3 for £1 in Peckham. Ah, I will enjoy. Why should I not enjoy? I'll enjoy life, please.
Okay. What is the most hated English word for you? Does that make sense? So the most hated?
Yes. I don't like the word but. I try not to use it often.
Explain.
Especially when you're having a talk with someone and you're engaging in a debate, because I feel like but is almost like, okay, I hear what you're saying, but I'm not going to acknowledge it in any sort of positive way. It's almost like it negates what
you've just said. But
yeah. So okay. So I liked that top, but if there was another one, that would be better. Just saying you don't like the top. You don't like the top. That's fine.
Right.
Or you like the top.
Okay.
But don't pretend that you like the top and then put but after it. I think it's just a conversational thing where people, I don't know, a lot of people talk to respond and don't talk to listen and really acknowledge what people are saying to them and really internalize it. Think, okay, so that's where you're coming from. Okay, maybe I don't agree, and I'm going to tell you I don't agree, but I do respect what you just said. Yeah. I'm not going to put a but at the end of it to say, I disagree.
Okay, so I want to give you the penultimate question.
Oh.
Because I do. And we're looking at the timing. So
that's cool.
I do want to actually ask you, if you could do a TED Talk, anything outside your profession of marketing, what would it be on?
So I would do a TED Talk on being the loudest version of yourself. And I guess like going through professional, and this is like something that's happened like throughout my professional career, you know, people would give me advice like, oh, you've got to be, maybe be a bit louder, or, you know, okay. In this industry, it's all about big personalities. And I think I went through a lot thinking that, oh my gosh, maybe I'm too quiet for media, or maybe I'm not, I don't really fit as a media personality, because, you know, this is what I'm sort of seeing outside the, you know, quiet exhibitionist. I'm not really one of those. So it took me a while to realise, and I say a while in that it's only been maybe the last few years or even a year or two, that you don't have to be another person. You could be yourself, but just be a louder version of you. Okay. So don't shy away from the things that make you you. So yes, I've got a very silly sense of humour. My little brothers cuss me all the time, saying like, you're such a big kid. So before, maybe I was stifled that. I like embrace that. Yes, I'm a big kid. I'm going to have fun and jokes because that's just who I am. I'm not a different person. I'm just embracing who I am and being louder with it. So if I was to give a TED talk, it would just be to encourage everyone. So you don't have to be different to fit in. You just be a louder version of yourself because you are you. There's nothing that's going to change that.
And my final question before I ask you how we can find you on the World Wide Web.
Cool.
Is how would you like to be remembered?
I would like to be remembered as someone who has sort of championed diversity and inclusion. I think that's like my biggest life passion, I would say. So that's why Scene TV plays like a big role in my life. It's just about giving people a platform for their voices to be heard. So I've coined the term myself. I don't know if I should say it here, but yeah, there's some. I've coined
exclusive.
I know, exclusive. So some people call themselves a storyteller. I sort of call myself a story seller because I like to sell other people's stories and give them a platform where they can shout about, you know, their experiences or their talents. So that's what I do through CTV. Marketing is part of selling as well. So I just feel like those, that sort of word brings it all together. So to be known as a great story seller.
Okay, guys, I feel like we need to definitely get you round two, round three,
oh,
round four.
Listen, you know I can talk now, right?
Because
I don't
have many hats. And there are a plethora of things that we clearly haven't touched upon, which I'd like to. And guys, do also make me accountable. So if there's any questions that you were like, Ade, why didn't you ask Michelle this, that, or the other?
Yeah.
Get at me or get at her directly. And how can we get at you directly?
I like that link. Find me on Twitter, as I mentioned at the beginning, so at Michelle Shanti. So it's MichelleShanti. Find me on Instagram the same way, but I might block you if you look a bit creepy. And Facebook is for my friends and family, so nah.
Yeah.
So when that's my place. And Scene TV, www.scenetv.co.uk.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And when we do find you, is there anything specific?
Just say hi. Like, I'm a friendly person.
And what is
what
it
can
that
I
you
help
can
you
do?
With?
Oh,
and then
can
what
do
can
you.
You do for me?
Gotcha.
Oh, I like that. What can you do for me?
Yeah.
I know.
Same
sound
name
like a boss.
No. You're a boss. Then you dash. No boss. Okay. So I do. I am going to round it up. But guys, once again, thanks very much for listening to another episode of Black Titulate. You already know how to get in touch with us. So please do. And stay tuned for the next episode. Peace.
Bye.
Hey guys, we would love to know what your thoughts are, what you think about the episode, so please do leave us a comment on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever it is you get your podcasts. And if you are somebody who does what our guest does, and there were things that we didn't cover, or perhaps you might have a different perspective on how to get into the industry, how to sustain it, how to thrive in it, how to kill it, then please get in touch too. Now, how do you get in touch? Well, you can reach us via email on contact@blackticulate.com or any of the major social media platforms. It is simply Blackticulate. So we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, SoundCloud. Give us feedback, help us grow, help us be accountable to you so the quality is always better, better, better. You guys are the best. Hope you have a great day and we'll see you in another episode of Blackticulate.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.